Yeah, talking about eufy.com. The Eufy video lock is unbelievable. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Best Buy stores starting on May 20th. What is it? It's a smart lock, 2K cam, and doorbell, 3-in-1, triple security, so you can have everything you need in one device rather than install many pieces on your front door. It's not just for security, but also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys like my wife. You can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated camera. It's easy to install and set up with just a Phillips head screwdriver, no drilling required. It's got a keyless entry. No more fumbling for the keys. When hands are full, never worry about kids losing keys or passing among the renters of your house. You got a rental property out there, this is a must-have. I love this product. Just got it a couple weeks ago. Huge fan. Have the Ring camera. It's okay. It's not as great as this, so I swapped it out. Go to Eufy Video Lock today on YouTube. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit EUFYOfficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
I hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
As a member of Congress, I get to have a lot of really interesting people in the office. Experts on what they're talking about.
This is the podcast
for insights into the issues.
China, bioterrorism, Medicare for all. In-depth discussions.
Breaking it down into simple terms.
We hold these truths.
With Dan Crenshaw.
Welcome to Drinking Bros crossover episode with Hold These Truths with Dan Crenshaw. Everybody's got a podcast now. Dan Crenshaw's got a podcast, and I'm amped about it. I'm a fan of Dan Crenshaw.
Yeah, he takes a lot of heat because he, like the average politician comes to the table with a fucking 90-second and 5-minute and 15-minute stump speech, mm-hmm. basically. It's an elevator pitch. Like, tell me about your company in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So they're very rehearsed and formulated opinions. Dan is of the opinion that if he has an idea and he puts it out into the public eye and the public sphere, then we can have an actual conversation about it and he can see what people really think. And also more eyes on any kind of problem is going to produce a better, more well-rounded result, typically speaking,
yeah.
unless it's something that requires specific expertise. Well, in this case, he happens to get a lot of heat because he's like, well, what if we did enact something like this? Like, he posed the question, if we collect, like, we're already collecting the information necessary to enact something like a red flag law, what would that look like if we did that? Just positing the question, like, what is our responsibility with that information? And people, a lot of people on the right just completely tore him down mm-hmm. for even considering it. But that's
posing
not...
posing the question.
Yeah, like, if we're not allowed to pose questions like that, then how are you, if it is genuinely a bad idea, how are you able to develop a sophisticated ideological defense against that bad idea unless you have that conversation with someone like Dan, who you know stands up for the Second Amendment? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I disagree with him about shit all the time. Like, he's called it immoral for people to get their student loans absolved. Like, come on, man, that's a stupid thing to say. So he says some shit that I think is dumb, but I would never question anybody. I wouldn't question their morality or ethics or intent or patriotism because they beg the question and want us to have a conversation about something. And I think that's a mistake for people to do that.
Yeah, man. And that's, again, why I personally love him so much. And I'm glad he's got a show because he deserves a unedited platform where he can really throw out these questions, toss out some ideas and see what people's real thoughts are on them.
Yeah. And despite having been lit up a few times,
he doesn't mind taking the heat.
No, he still keeps coming back to the table and discussing things with people. So, you know, he's, I guess, the hero we need. Not really the one we deserve. But
good dude. Good dude. And how many members of Congress actually have their own podcasts?
Well, it's him and Ted Cruz.
Yeah. It's fun to see, man, because we're in that time. And again, a podcast leaves yourself open to having more thoughtful conversations that are unedited, less rehearsed.
Yeah.
And I'm glad Dan's doing it. The beauty of having, you know, three hosts is that we can roam sometimes and go all over the country. So the day that this happened, actually, you and I got called in for Alex Jones.
Yeah, we were in Austin, and Jared was in D.C. with Richard Stasekall and Natalie Kwom.
Correct.
Who you all are familiar with at this point, with the Government Accountability Act and all that shit. And Lindsey Graham can get fucked, by the way. He's still on my list. But yeah, this was just one of those things, right place, right time. But that's kind of the story of Jared's life, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. So we were in New York. You and I were flying to Austin. He's like, hey, man, I just got a call. I'm going to do a crossover show with Dan Crenshaw. I was like, great. So we split up. You and I did Alex Jones. He did Dan Crenshaw. Tonight is that episode. If you dig Dan Crenshaw, his new podcast is called Hold These Truths, and it is out now. He's got a bunch of episodes too, man. So you don't have to wait, 2 weeks to go find another episode. He's got 15, 16 episodes out, which is great, including this one you're about to hear tonight. You know the rules, kids. We got sponsors to pay for this whole shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. 25% off, Dan. What the fuck?
That's a quarter off of every dollar.
Imagine if you lost a quarter of your body.
Well, Derek White did.
Yeah, damn right he did. He's on. By the way, he's on Drinking Broettes. Download that episode now. It's great. I just listened to it last night. It's fantastic. Yeah, if you lost a quarter, dude, you know, that'd be a lot, Dan. It'd be a lot of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, luckily they give you the whole bed, though.
They do.
Like, it's not just a quarter of the bed. You get the whole thing.
Yeah,
so
you don't have to order, even if you're a tiny person, like a midget, you don't have to order a king thinking they're going to take 25% of it off. They're not going to.
No.
They're going to send you the full mattress. You get all of the sheets. You get all the pillows, the entire adjustable base. They're not taking 25% out of anything except your wallet. Go to ghostbed.com/drinking bros today. And as always, they got the pay as you go program. No interest. 36 months. Fuck. It's like $20, man, for all your favorite shit on the planet. Get yourself a mattress. Treat yourself. A lot of people might say. Next up, we got KillCliffCBD.com. Dan, I love it. I drink it every night.
Just got two more cases in the mail yesterday.
It's the best. It's the best in the biz. My parents are fucking drinking, which is weird, man. I told this maybe on Ross Patterson Revolution, but I was like, when I went to my parents' house, my dad was drinking a KillCliff CBD, and I was like, whoa. I thought it was in the future, you know? And I was like, whoa, we're here now, and you're cool? Yes, it is.
I mix it with lean.
Oh, that's great.
Instead of, I'm not a big fan of
Sprite.
Of like sugary sodas and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're looking for a low carb way to get high on lean.
Yeah.
Just saying.
KillCliff CBD, you mix it with that grape, same flavor. You know what I'm saying?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, I've been using orange because that's my flavor, but, you know, I'm sure grape would probably be good.
Yeah, it's great. Look, KillCliffCBD.com is the best in the biz. 25 milligrams of CBD in every can. It's like 15 calories, no carbs, no sugars. It tastes fucking awesome. It goes great with vodka, too. If you're looking to fucking chill out on the weekend, maybe have an oyster roast or go over to somebody's house and smoke a pork butt, throw a little bit of KillCliff CBD in that vodka, dude. That'll set the mood and put you where you need to be. With the 20% off of the promo code Drinking Bros, that knocks these cases down. Each can of like $3.80. You can buy a can of Monster for that, or you can buy some fucking CBD. And by the way, you won't fucking test hot for this shit. You know what I'm saying?
It's not possible.
No, you're good to go. Go to KillCliffCBD.com today. Promo code Drinking Bros, 20% off and free shipping, dude. On cans, that's a big fucking deal. Last but not least, talking about VinceroWatches.com. Yeah. I'm wearing one now. I got the blue steel one on right now. Big fan. Go to VinceroWatches.com. That's VINCERO Watches.com. Promo code Drinking Bros gets you 15% off there on these lovely watches. Look, we're amped to be partnering with these guys. You can find a watch that just fucking looks cool, man. You got the rubber grip. You got that rubber band, dude.
It's silicone. Yeah, it's good.
Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
God damn it, man. It's nice. I went with the fucking Lynx, dude. I'm trying to look nice in suits, you know, when I got to wear them here and there.
Yeah.
Here and there'sies. Look, I wear this watch all the time. If you watch the show, this is what I've been wearing. It's pretty sweet that they're a fucking sponsor, man. It kind of looks like Breitling's, dude, except they're affordable. All these watches are affordable, and with the promo code Drinking Bros, you get 15% off the watches and free shipping. And especially with this one. This one's fucking heavy, dude. It's probably another $10 probably on that shipping charge. Not there, dude. Bold, modern designs. And they got a million options, man. They get over 20,000 five-star reviews. Amped to be working with these guys. There's always an occasion you will need a nice watch. Go to VinceroWatches.com. That's V-I-N-C-E-R-O Watches.com. Promo code Drinking Bros for 15% off and free shipping. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hop into the episode with Mr. Dan Crenshaw, shall we?
Special episode today, special guest. This is a little bit different than other episodes because we're not exactly doing a policy deep dive. I don't know, it could turn into that, but I am here with JT Lander. Was that how I spell pronounce your last name? Is it Lander?
This is really funny because this is the second time this has happened to me today.
Lunder.
I didn't know that this, when people Google me now on our website, it's a placeholder It's saying JT Lander, landing page. My full name is Jared Taylor. So yes,
that's your full name.
I was introduced today as JT Lander because they
really?
Yeah, I got to go to my IT.
Yeah, because I always thought JT was just your like initials, you know, first name, middle name. And I actually didn't know your last name. And so when they, like, my staff wrote your name into the calendar. So,
yeah, that's
Lander is not part of your name.
Not at all. But this happened to me twice today.
It is now.
It is. I kind of like it.
That'll be the title of this episode. It'll be JT Lander or something.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Jared Taylor.
Jared Taylor, if that's your real name. Not according to the internet.
Yeah, I mean, if it's on the internet, it's right. We all know that now. It's 2020.
That's true. Well, thanks for coming. And sorry we screwed up your name so bad. We could re-record that, but nah, no, that's kind of fun.
Not on this episode. Well, it's perfect.
And nothing gets cut out of this episode, which is dangerous. Welcome. You're coming in from Texas.
Yes.
And you're up in D.C. and we'll get to the reasons why you're in D.C. But mostly it's just good to see you. We got to know each other somewhat recently, really just this year.
Yeah, it was six, seven months ago.
Just connecting. And the reason we got to know each other, the reason you're on the internet, you're somewhat famous, is because you're...
Where does that lie on the fame scale? Like, are we F? Are we G? Where does the internet lie?
Like as far as how to be famous? You're pretty famous internet scale, right? Like, I mean, you guys are... So, you guys being Black Rifle Coffee...
Yes.
People should know about that, right?
MBest11X was the YouTube channel that kind of kicked all of this stuff off.
Yeah.
And we went into a brand called Article 15 Clothing, and then it had expanded from there and moved into coffee and even liquor.
Really? So I didn't know all that. I didn't know about the clothing or the other thing you said. I do remember when you guys started coming out with random videos, right? Because they were very popular in the special operations community. And these were the how to work out like an operator on YouTube,
how to be an operator,
the SEAL Ranger rap battle. I mean, what spawned that stuff?
So I have been studying filmmaking or video making since I was 14 years old. Like I grew up skateboarding. My dad was a skateboarder. He was in the Navy as well. Mm. And since I was 14, I've had a camera in my hands. And then when I enlisted in the Air Force and got to go to this cool job, I kept that camera in my hands because we were dropping bombs off airplanes in close proximity of us. And I've never seen anything like that filmed. So I just kind of kept it going. And I was always making comedy here and there, but it never really stuck. I didn't find my thing until, you know, I had Matt had sent one of his videos to a Facebook page that I was helping administrate, and I watched it and just knew right then, like, that literally I said out loud, like, this is the friend, the person I've been looking for. Yeah. Forever.
Did we just become best friends? Is that kind of moment?
Yes. If you read the book, he actually has his book. He has the actual conversation between us.
Really?
And it was exactly like that. I was like, you're it. You're the one in front of the camera. Yeah. I'm the guy behind the camera. I can make all
he's
this.
He's got that camera ready face. You've got a great face beautiful. For podcasts.
I got a great weight for podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
we don't want to fly it. We don't want to, be blown away or anything. You got to keep the weight down.
Actually, I just came from Mark Wayne's office and he told me I was supposed to give you hell about your weight.
Really?
I don't know what that means, but
it wasn't very nice of him. I've lost weight.
We'll beat him up.
Yeah, we will.
Since he's the one out there challenging people to a fight.
He's an ex-cage fighter.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about that.
He can fight. Yeah. And he's a good guy. One of my friends up here.
Texas and Oklahoma is a good rivalry.
In what way?
I mean, we're tough and they're kind of tough too.
They're not really that. I mean, Texas is it really a fair fight?
I feel like more people bale hay in Oklahoma than they do in Texas. And I just associate that with toughness.
Agree to disagree. I'm just of the opinion that nobody can compete with Texas. And so, just being,
I'm going to go ahead and agree with that.
Native Texan. It's hard for me. Are you originally from Texas?
I am not.
Where are you? This is why you're giving some space to Oklahoma just now.
So I'm from Washington.
You need to be
State.
In Texas longer and then you'll understand.
I'm now a homeowner in Texas. So yes. Now I do. And good. I am not leaving Texas.
Yeah.
This will be my
Don't
spot.
Don't go to Washington. Don't go back.
That I will not.
Washington State can be pretty beautiful up there, except for Seattle and their craziness is a little nuts. But, I have been up there. We used to do training. Well, I never got to go to training up there. I've been on my own, but up in Bull Hill, our snipers go out there. It's just an absolutely beautiful area. But we're getting off topic. Let's go back to, that was a Dr. Pepper for everybody listening. Not that it would matter.
I do like that you have a giant case of Dr. Pepper in here. Yeah. I was like,
Texas,
Texas.
You have to have the Dr. Pepper here in Texas and some good bourbon.
So yeah, we were making, so I meet Matt.
So you're making these videos, which are hilarious. And again, you got to look them up if you haven't seen the How to Work Out Like an Operator. And I think it's funny even for people who aren't in the special operations community.
Well, that's what we started to see kind of in the middle of our first year was, no one was doing comedy like this. I mean, you had the Whitest Kids You Know, which was a sketch comedy group that got pretty popular and had a show on the Independent Film Channel. And you had Good Neighbor. They kind of were running the internet. So you had all these groups that were putting out really good comedy skits, but nobody was putting out military humor. And yeah. I think if you combine the fact that Matt and I were mid-level NCOs, E5s, E6s, our jokes were a little bit more sophisticated in the mid-tier of the military rather than being kind of what we call boot humor now. When you're doing sketches about boot camp and stuff like that, I mean, that's funny to the kids that just get out of it.
Right.
Whereas, you watch our videos, our jokes are more along the lines of the culture. Specifically, you mentioned How to Work Out Like an Operator, and Matt had said, this is Delta Force, and he just threw a kettlebell nobody.
Yeah, there was nobody there because they're so secret, right? And then obviously, as I recall, the video showed, this is if you're a SEAL, you lift all the weight, right? Because you're the strongest.
Yeah, I think that was it.
I'm pretty sure that was it.
And that's what I ask every Navy SEAL I meet. I immediately touch their bicep and I just say, man, did you leave any weights for the rest of us?
Yeah, that's what you asked me. It was awkward because it was in a public space.
Well, I was at the Army Navy game.
You couldn't reach your hand around the giant bicep.
I had both.
It was tough.
This last weekend, I was at the Army Navy game, and I was up in the president's box. Somehow they let me in there. I didn't get to meet him, though. I'm kind of sad. I was excited for that. I just missed him. He went down to the field to talk to the cadets.
But I didn't get invited to the president's box.
You weren't up there at the game. You had a party in Houston.
That's true. Party. But, just didn't get an invite. So I'm sad now, too.
Well, A guy comes walking by me wearing his dress. He was an E-8 and saw the try. And I go, oh, man, is that a real live Navy SEAL? he stops and starts cracking up at me. We start talking. And it turns out, you know, he knows us from the videos and things. Yeah. And then I get a message yesterday into our customer service that was like, hey, JT found me at the Army-Navy game and got a picture with me. And he like, quoted it. Like, he came running up yelling, is that a real live Navy SEAL? And sent his phone number. So I ended up calling him yesterday and sent him the picture. It was pretty funny.
That is awesome. So you guys started making videos. You had the epic rap battle between Rangers and SEALs. And again, I recommend you got to watch these because they're really spot on. You guys nail the cultural aspects of the Spec Ops community pretty well.
So those
and then it transformed. Oh, go ahead.
How to be an operator and Navy SEAL versus Army Ranger were two kind of pinnacle points. Mm-hmm. The how to be an operator took off and was the first video that we saw a few hundred thousand views.
Were you guys trying to do anything with these videos or was it just fun? You were just making them for fun.
It was fun, but at the time, Matt and I were studying YouTubers. Like, how do we become, you know, paid people on YouTube?
You weren't sure what you wanted to do with it necessarily. Just let's try it out.
But the goal was traffic. Like, how do we get maximum amount of views? And that's kind of when how to be an operator had taken off. We were astonished. Like, okay, we just saw a few hundred thousand views. And when you come from, you know, the most I had ever seen prior to that was 2,000. You go from 2,000 to a few hundred thousand. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, oh my God, mm-hmm. we have something here. And then Navy SEAL versus Ranger came out, and that was the first one that we saw 300 to 500 in the first few days. And we were just like kind of looking at each other like, what are we going to do? And I had just left the schoolhouse. And when I was at the schoolhouse, I ran our store.
Schoolhouse.
The Tech P schoolhouse.
Let's rewind a little bit. So you're a Tech P. You're which is Air Force Special Operations.
It's not necessarily. You can go it can as be, a TACP, okay, yeah, you can be in it, but we cover both.
When you work with us, you're sort of part of the Special Operations community, and you know we like you guys, sort of. I'm just kidding.
Sometimes.
We love you guys. Yeah, we've had Air Force work with us, and it's always a great experience.
So.
I met you.
Yeah. And then I changed your outlook on the Air Force special warfare world. Coming from the schoolhouse, I ran the store and that taught me kind of procurement of products. Like, who do I call to make coins? Who do I call to make glassware? Who do I call to make t-shirts and things like that? So I had pitched to Matt and which was funny because I found our initial conversation the other day and it was just like, hey, why don't we start our own thing? And he's like, you mean we just go in 50-50? I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And we see
what happens.
We pushed in and created Article 15 clothing. And originally our goal was only to make...
Explain Article 15.
Article 15 is when you get in trouble in the military.
Oh,
and,
okay.
and how neither me nor Matt have an Article 15, but the way that I felt senior leadership would kind of look at us as we were getting popular on the internet is these guys are constantly making fun of the military. They're like these.
Oh, you guys are active duty.
I was
doing that.
Yes.
Oh. Could have faced an Article 15.
Yeah. Well, if you do watch them, we do stay pretty clean and stay off topics.
That's true.
That
I mean,
would
yeah,
get
just,
us in trouble.
Just to be clear, it's, you know, you can operate an outside business while you're active duty.
So we kicked this thing off with the goal in mind to have, you know, an extra few thousand dollars a month for us to spend on better video equipment, more production value, maybe, and even like we had discussed, like maybe hire like an actor or a popular person to like come in and
like me.
And, yeah, exactly.
this is the pinnacle of your success. It's just, no, it's not.
I would say we're definitely getting here right now because I am in what is this referred to as the house?
I'm a professional comedian.
Yes.
Okay. Just to be clear, I was on Saturday Night Live. I know you guys are comedians. But I was on Saturday Night Live. Doesn't that give me any kind
Absolutely.
Of
sway? I mean, that literally is...
I have a picture with Pete Davidson. It's right behind me.
Oh, man, we were roasting him so bad the day after that. That was so funny.
Yeah. He's a nice kid. I mean...
The way you handled it is literally the funniest possible method that you could.
Well, like the way that all played out was you could easily see two different directions with that entire scenario. One direction... is the one that's normally taken, which is I would have snapped back at him.
Snarky or angry.
Yeah,
and then you kind of just like, look like oh, a salty veteran.
Yeah, and this is how the liberal elites treat veterans and conservatives. Like, no surprise there, right? And, you know, you could have done that, and there's highly unlikely that SNL would have actually reached out after that and invited me on the show.
Yeah, because they would think that you just are kind of no personality. Like.
Right, well, that and, like... You've moved to your corners, yeah. You know, it doesn't. And that's the
and
normal.
Hostile.
Yeah. And that's the normal outrage culture response. That is what happens. And then there's the other. And then there's what really happened, which is kind of gave them some space. I didn't demand an apology. I didn't insult him back. I was just like, well, it's kind of messed up what you said. It was offensive. I'm not offended, but it was offensive. And there's a difference because I had to kind of. That was a weird one because I did have to speak out for a lot of veterans.
People who were generally
upset about it. But you got to give them the space and think, okay, did they mean to make fun of Republicans specifically? Yes, they did. That part was clear. There's a lot of evidence for that. But did they mean to degrade a war wound? That one seemed a little bit more like a mistake.
Yeah.
And so let's see what they say. Right. And it, you know, turns out, yeah, they felt bad about it. And,
did you get a response right away? Or how did that unfold?
No,
I would love to hear that.
No,
story.
I didn't. Because it was all going, everybody was going nuts on Sunday, right? So Saturday Night Live, it does happen on Saturday night, as it turns out. And so Sunday is when I find out about all this and we're trying to craft our response and all that. So, you know, we figured that out. And my line was actually a line that I learned at Harvard, of all places, you know, one of the first things that one of the professors during orientation told us because I left the military and went to do my master's. He said, hey, while you're here, you know, try really hard not to offend others. Try even harder not to be offended. I was like, that's a really perfect way of stating this. You know, especially in dealing with the current campus culture.
Yes.
That's just the right tone. Like, don't be a jerk. Don't go looking.
Yeah, don't go poking.
Yeah, because it's easy to do that, right? I can think of all these ways to trigger somebody else. But so don't try to do that. Just act normally and then expect them to not be offended by your normal behavior. Okay, pretty reasonable. And so that's what I said. And I think one of their lower level producers had reached out and said, oh, we're sorry. And that was kind of a meaningless private apology. And then Lorne Michaels, the executive producer, the creator of the show, reached out and said, yeah, not only are we sorry, but we want you to be on the show, you know, and then it all kind of, and the rest.
I mean,
is
really, it just, it does well for everybody because that
right.
becomes,
it's
I mean,
a win-win.
It was an outrage for about 3 days. The internet was in, you know, it was all that was posted, the memes, the attacks back and forth, the tweets with him and everything like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, as a smart production, yes, capitalize on the traffic and bring you in for your rebuttal in person.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, there's 100 skits you could write in that whole scenario.
They did call me a hitman in a porno. So, yeah, there's a lot of skits you could write.
Coming next summer.
Yeah. It's like... Yeah, I mean, imagination runs wild there, but we never got into that, and it ended up being a cool thing. You know, Pete's not a terrible guy. He's
I mean,
just,
were you he super was, excited when you got when they were like, "You're going to come be on SNL"?
Yeah, it is exciting. It's kind of you're just in such a different world. It was surreal then. It still seems surreal. Frankly, this entire experience because it happened very quickly for me. Running for office has been pretty surreal. You know, we're in my office now, and this is. I've never had an office.
and now you have one on the Hill.
Yeah, I've had.
You really skipped those steps.
Yeah. I was like, you know, I just made 04 at the end of my 10-year career. I was just made lieutenant commander. And I didn't like the pipeline. Let's skip a few steps. I run for Congress. No, in truth, I couldn't stay in the Navy anymore because of something about eyesight. Oh, we have
depth of perception.
Two eyes. Yeah. There's dumb rules, and we're trying to change those.
I've got a question for you. Since you've been elected, are you somewhat excited that you now kind of have a means to fix some of the things that, you know, a lot of us have frustrations in the military, and like now that you're here, like, was that one of the things that went through your head when you were elected?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the number one reason you run. It's impact. And, everybody runs for different things. Right. But it usually does boil down to impact. Maybe some people want to impact specific issues. There wasn't specific issues that stood out for me. It's a broad range of issues. It's a form of governance that matters to me. I believe in a conservative form of governance and a constitutional republic. And there's a way to problem solve that I think makes a lot more sense than alternatives. And so being a responsible governor as a legislator is extremely important to me. And there's a lot of elements to that, what I mean by responsible and limited and something that protects individual freedom, that protects states' rights, that protects this notion of federalism that is embodied in the Constitution, this notion that is embodied in the Declaration of Independence of why government exists, to protect inalienable rights, not to give you new stuff, all right? Something we forget pretty often. So like these really foundational elements are really why I ran.
Well, I have to say, you know, as a social media kind of climate expert, I would say self-proclaimed expert.
Yeah, experts.
Like you are one of the very first people, and you're kind of redefining the way that how you get and you utilize your social media to explain these things in a way that everybody can understand. And I've heard countless comments from friends of mine that are like, I love the videos he makes, that after you vote for something or after somebody declines something, you get on camera and explain to the public, hey, this is just what just happened.
Yeah.
Here is what side I was on. Here is who was on the other side. Call your people.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, you know, you're representing your district.
Right.
And if they want certain things, you're there to help them get those.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate that. That's the genesis of those Here's the Truth videos are just that. Like, let's just explain what we're talking about. And to be fair, a lot of members do something similar. But there's an art to social media. You know, again, as an expert, you understand these things, right? There's a way to do the camera angle. There's a way to frame the picture.
You always do subtitles, and that's very smart.
Always do subtitles. That was what I was going to bring that up next.
I watch a lot of your stuff on airplanes,
right,
just on silent, because
right,
I can read.
Everybody
what you're
does, and that's a product of our age too. Like, yeah, we grew up in this era. You're probably close to, how old are you?
I'm 34, about to be 35.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You look older.
Damn it.
Because you got like gray hair.
Well, you know, owned businesses.
Well, so we're this, you're a physicist.
No, owned businesses for the last few years.
You said you were a physicist.
Yes, I went to Josh Hopkins.
Yes, I'm a rocket surgeon. Operate on the rockets.
I did, however, hang out with the White House liaison to NASA last night, and
well, aren't
and
you
learned
name dropping.
That was very fascinating.
Yeah.
And like,
gotta have that person on the podcast.
He stopped at like 2 hours and he's like, hey, am I boring? I'm like, are you kidding? This is probably the coolest stuff I've ever heard in the last decade. Like, teaching me about some of the discoveries that they've had in the last couple of years are like mind boggling. And I'm like, this is exciting. Like,
yeah. We need to get them on the show. You get some NASA folks on the show.
It was
Danny.
It's
get them on.
Very interesting. What's going on over there right now? Like, you know, what the plans are for the moon and things like that. Like,
that's really cool. What are we going to do with the moon? Are we going to bring it to Earth?
No. But you know, how
you could have put it in an exhibit or something.
He is explaining it. You know, he taught me this thing that, you know, about gravity and such. And you there is this
never heard of gravity.
Well, just how it's working.
The moon creates tides.
When you're traveling back and forth, and they found this point in between us and the moon that is absolute zero gravity.
To
where you're not being pulled backwards, and you're not being pulled forward.
Well, yeah, in theory, there would have to be that point, right?
Yes.
I mean, God, when you start getting to the interesting theories of gravity.
This is all fresh in my head right now because it was last night.
But like the theories of gravity and whether it's a force that's, there's gravitrons, for instance. Does he get into gravitrons?
Well, he did say that they've recently discovered in the last 2 years that gravity operates in waves. And then he's like,
and if it operates in waves, then it might be a particle as well.
Manipulate in the different peaks that there is. So it's just very interesting stuff.
It's crazy because like a light is a wave, but also a particle. You know, it's a photon that operates as a wave, and it's difficult. We can observe this reality. We understand it to an extent, but it doesn't quite make sense. Like so we know there's photons, we know there's are particles, and yet they operate as it was a wave would operate, with wave interference and things like that. So I was a physics minor, so I like this stuff too. I would totally nerd out about this thing.
I was wide eyed for 4 hours. Just like, no, keep going.
Crazy. It's really crazy stuff. I mean, particles, by themselves, they operate as waves. It's not just photons. It's all particles. They operate with a wave structure. And then you get into the quantum mechanics of it. And it's like,
I'm very giddy right now.
Talk to each other about it.
Because I want to tell you something, but I'm going to wait till we're not recording. there was some cool things.
We can always cut it out, I guess, if you want to tell me. It's obviously you learned a secret about our plans on Mars or something.
Well, one thing we were talking about Mars is, you know, because we are going to build we're going to manufacture on the moon eventually.
Yeah.
And that's no secret. You know, they found a lot of ice on the moon, which means hydrogen. You know, they're going to be able to manufacture a propellant with what's on the moon. You know, it's just our LIMFAC right now is getting the equipment out of the atmosphere.
Right. So, and that's that.
And we're trying
that
to
limited
that
factor
out.
Is much less so on the moon because there's less gravity, no atmosphere.
But he brought up a very, very crazy point. He's like, "Do you know how long it takes for a radio wave to get to Mars?" I'm like, no, I
33
can't do that.
Minutes.
Man says 40. Yeah, 40, 44, 45.
I was close.
Yeah?
I did the calculation really quickly in my head because you know I'm a math
scientist.
That's
what
scientist.
You do. Yeah. So he's like, "You are looking at a camera. You move the joystick, you wait an hour and a half, and then you see it happen."
Have you seen the show on Netflix, Mars?
I have not seen that yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's interesting because it's like it's half documentary about like 2016 era people. So they're interviewing Elon Musk, and they're interviewing really real people and real experiments about rocket science and stuff and all that. And then they go like 20 years into the future when we're actually doing a mission. And so that part's fiction.
That's pretty cool.
It's a good show.
I mean, he just said we recently took a satellite offline that we sent to the edge of space in 1974 or something like that.
Took it offline?
But we were still communicating with it, but it finally kind of started.
Ran out
to
of batteries?
Break. Yeah, the battery, the power was.
What was it telling us?
He wouldn't tell me.
Okay, well, we're going to get him on the show.
But he said, it's at the edge of space.
What the heck does that mean?
I don't know. Apparently NASA found the edge of space.
There's no edge of space.
It's flat spacers, not flat earthers.
Tricked you. I don't know. Now I got to find this guy. So that was a big tangent on space exploration and quantum physics and whatnot. What the heck were we talking about just before that?
You know what? I think we've covered it all now. You know where your office is now because you've never had an office.
Yeah, I never had an office. Oh yeah, we were skipping rank. That's what we were doing. Then something about having one eye in the Navy, not allowed, which is. Just seems counterintuitive considering,
you can drive a boat with one eye.
I can drive a boat. I can do a lot of things with one eye but mostly looking cool with an eye patch seems to be an inherently Navy, characteristic.
I would say that. You know, Metal Gear Solid. Are you a fan of that?
Yeah. There's a lot of memes.
Oh, are there
memes out there?
I mean, you got to go for that at Halloween.
Right. I mean, Yeah, I mean, I kind of have. I dressed up as Thor last Halloween.
Oh, there you go.
Because Thor copied me.
Yeah, he did.
Right? And
there's a big resemblance there, you two.
Clearly.
Not the most recent one, but the other one.
No, not the fat Thor.
No, not fat Thor
that lost his mind. Yeah, no, fat Thor got weird. And you know why, though? It's because he stopped wearing an eye patch. So, you know, cool Thor had an eye patch. You know, he didn't lose it in a cool way. He got punched in the face by his sister. If you've watched Thor Ragnarok, and then he got his hair cut off, and then he grew a beard, a nicely trimmed beard like mine, and then got an eye patch on his right eye. So the god of thunder.
And then he turned into Storm.
Yeah, yeah. And then he just became Storm, right? Thor's still cool. Although he should have lost weight for the end of the Avengers.
So
movie.
When I get home from this trip, I'm going home tomorrow. I'm going to spend all weekend building a Vietnam base on my property. Because I am going to start a series called Nommed.
Nommed?
Yeah, like just NAM-D. And it's just about a unit, like just a LERP unit in Vietnam. And, you know, bought all the sandbags, the tents. I got a skid steer. I'm really excited for this.
Wow, so you guys are taking your production to a whole new level.
Yes.
I mean, you really like movie making, which I concur with. I like it too. A lot of the reason the Here's the Truth videos sort of came to be. Maybe that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Was Here's the Truth videos. So I'll develop into why I'm doing this podcast right after that. But I like making videos too. I like seeing the angle. I like editing. I did some.
Are you editing these yourself?
Not all of them, yeah. But originally, yes.
But going through the editing process.
Not now, saying, because we've trained others to do it. I take a big role in all of these videos. All of the funny videos you see, like the JJ Watt video. Have you seen that one?
Not yet.
I thought you followed me on social media.
I do. No, I texted you the.
Do you?
Yeah, yes, the one where you were trying.
Are you just making it up now?
You were texting him. You were waiting for him to text you. I had to Google who the hell JJ Watt was and why. Like, I was laughing at the video.
He's a famous football player. It's a great video.
I texted you that day and said, we need to make this where I keep asking.
I thought we were friends. I wasn't sure if you'd seen all my videos.
Why you won't pick up or why you won't go to lunch with me or something. You're like, remember what happened last time at Hard Cuts and we're in Tijuana and we got hats and, you know, you're like, that's why I don't hang out with you anymore.
For the record, I was on Tijuana. He's making that up. It was a hypothetical. So anyway, the JJ Watt video, which you have seen, which was hilarious, right? And for anybody who hasn't seen it, just go to my Instagram. JJ Watt's a football player. He put his number out on Twitter, said to text him. And I was like,
did he respond to the video?
No, he's never responded to me.
What?
It's crazy.
What team is he on?
Texans. Houston Texans, yeah.
Wait, he's not even on a pro team and he won't respond to the video?
I don't know how to take that.
I'm kind of mad.
What? What's your football team?
I don't know what football is. Is that golf?
Like they do hat tricks and stuff.
I've never been a sports person at all. Like,
actually, a lot of military guys aren't. People don't realize that. But what was I? Okay, so that video I totally did myself. Right, like I just had my wife film it. I tell her what angle to do it at, and like I cut it, I edit it, I do the whole thing. Obviously I don't have the time to do that all the time, but sometimes I'm like, I'm going to do this myself. So I get that. I love doing it. And I think that's where the Here's the Truth stuff came from. And it's like, why I know I'm like, listen, I'm a millennial. I understand that I don't always turn the sound on. So put subtitles on there. I also understand that if you caption the video with like headers and footers, very easy to do, but it catches the eye.
It's video memes.
Yes.
Yeah. It's basically video memes,
right? And you're like, okay, so here's the subject matter and they're going to tell me something. And you can go online and figure out like, what are the different phrases that have higher traffic?
Click through where they're going to watch.
And I actually only recently looked at that. And it was really interesting what I found. What was the number one? The number one is, this will make you. The phrase "this will make you" has more traction, like by far, than any other phrase, because it's an emotional response. Like, this will make you angry. Watch this. This will make you
this
angry.
This will make you cry.
Yeah, or this will make you so happy.
Watch, and
you're
like, end.
Well, I want to be made happy. So yeah, let me watch this. It's crazy.
This is my anti theory against video games.
Well,
okay. I'm like, I'm upset with how video games are made, because for me, if I'm going to spend $70 on a video game, I don't want 4 hours of instruction. I want to start with the biggest gun, unlimited ammo, and God mode, because I just want to. I want to win.
Right.
I'm playing a virtual, because it doesn't matter. A video game gives you a false sense of achievement. You spend hours upon hours, and you've won this digital thing. But at the end of the day, what did you really accomplish?
Well,
you just wasted a bunch of time.
Yeah, you're going to make all the gamers listening really mad.
I'm just saying.
I haven't played a lot of video games since I was in high school and I was destroying gold.
They got too complicated for me.
They are hard. Like on deployment, like all the guys would be crushing, you know,
Call of Duty.
Yeah, Call of Duty and all that. And I would try. I just die every 5 seconds. So eventually I'm done with it.
Yeah. There's too much learning curve to it now.
There's a lot. There's a lot. There's people have gotten too good at it. Yeah. You know, and I miss the days of GoldenEye.
Nintendo 64 all day
great.
Long.
It was great. I mean, it was the first person shooter. It's still the classic.
And you could do four way on the screen.
In college we got an original Nintendo. We had Duck Hunt. That was cool. How the heck does Duck Hunt work? Do you know? Like why does a TV that's not necessarily connected to the gun that you're using, why does it work?
That is because, yeah,
you don't know?
I don't because, I mean, thinking either. About that, there's no RF receiver inside the TV. No. So how does it know
it's any TV, where you're it's pointing? It's just a screen. So maybe there's like a little camera inside the
technology.
Gun.
Technology.
But it's accurate. It's not an inaccurate gun. It works.
Never thought about that. Because remember Super Scope 6?
We should think about these kind of things.
I know. Nintendo was
mostly what we do in these podcasts is we think about deep things. I mean, you know, before you walked in here, I had two other podcasts recorded, one on occupational licensing, which is really important, especially to low income earners. Before that, we're talking about bioterrorism. That's all important stuff, but so is this.
Yeah.
People need to know.
How did they do
how
this?
Does Duck Hunt work?
Because as a radio operator my entire military career, I don't understand what the TV played in this role. Because a Super Nintendo or a regular Nintendo is just plugged in using two RCA cables, an audio.
That's more than most people know.
Stereo.
What does RCA stand for?
I don't even know.
Radio component affiliate.
You have a video then you have a stereo red and white.
Yeah, the colors.
So
yeah.
That's not communicating with
which are not even used anymore, by the way. Yes, those three things. I think I still have a bunch of those cables just in a drawer because you never know when you're going to need them because that's the old way of thinking. Like, oh yeah, I'll probably need these cables at some point. You don't need them.
Yeah, but yeah, TVs don't even have the
there's nothing
the ability to plug them into.
I don't even have cable anymore. We just use the internet and watch Netflix.
I mean, I think this is the true question of 2020.
Which one?
How did Duck Hunt work?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
If there's a couple things that the presidential candidates need to be answering. One, how does Duck Hunt work? Because if you can answer that, you can probably answer anything. And you can probably figure out the theoretical zero gravity point between the moon and the earth.
Yes. If somebody can guess where it is, you know, I'll give them a free bag of coffee.
Yeah. Really? Oh, there's the challenge. There's the challenge.
I mean, you just got a few hundred thousand miles.
Yeah. But the next question beyond that is how to solve traffic. I don't know why a political party hasn't centered around the idea of
have you listened to
traffic.
Some of my shows?
All of them.
Because this was, no. I did a show on this. I go, I was just pointing out the fact that I find it one of those periods that immigration and abortion are the two biggest like items that the two sides fight over. And it's like, why? Like, it, you know, even living in a border town for 4 years of my life in El Paso, like immigration wasn't that big of a concern. Like we didn't have a very big problem with it in El Paso. Like, but, and same thing, you know, the abortion thing, that's whoever wants to argue about that. They can argue about that. But I said, give me a candidate that just comes out and goes, you know what? I'm going to listen to Elon Musk and I'm going to build four more freeways in the ground and we're not going to have traffic anymore. I'll be like, who's going to argue with that? Like, wait, no more traffic?
I'm going with that one. Powerful one.
I'm going with that guy.
I like what Elon Musk is thinking about with tunnel systems. I think I'd like to see him invest more in flying cars.
I think we why don't you think about that? Because, you know, do you want everybody to be flying?
No, we're talking automated drones. Let's think about the technology that's already out there. There's flying car conventions right now. A lot of the technology's there. I think we should be looking at, from a government perspective, we should be looking at, let's get ahead of the regulations so that the private investors know what to do,
what to build and what to innovate towards. Yes.
You know, this stuff isn't that far.
Well, when we go to full automation, we then increase our speeds. So if we woke up tomorrow and we had full automated cars and there wasn't a single driver, you know, human driven car, we can do 130 miles an hour on the freeway because it's all programmed. Everybody's going the same speed. Everything's operating within, you know, ones and zeros and not think about that because now car travel, you start cutting your travel times in half. Four-hour drive now becomes a two-hour drive.
Yeah, maybe 130 miles an hour. No, I mean, I get what you're saying. It's correct. You eventually, the goal is to free up space on highways via the air. Because the reason I say, hey, you have to go above ground at some point is because you can't build tunnels everywhere, right? It's expensive. And in cities like Houston, you can't build a metro. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, with what we have now, yes, it would be incredibly expensive and almost unfeasible. But this also leads me to another theory that I've had is Elon Musk, we are going to turn him into a supervillain.
Oh.
I mean, he just keeps coming up with these really good ideas. Like, he keeps solving a bunch of weird problems.
Yeah, but eventually he'll take over the world.
But everybody ignores him. So they're like, yeah, Elon, here we go with your tunnel highways. And he's like... Literally, I just fixed your problem. Like, you don't want to listen to me. Eventually, he's going to go, fine, I'm now creating a weapon. We're going to have a Tesla coil that's automated, flying around, chasing us. Like,
well, it's not, I mean, geez, you bring up an interesting point. We've never had an actual evil genius.
I know.
This hasn't happened. And I hope it never does, because, I mean, if Elon Musk turned on us, that's not good.
I mean, we could maybe say Hitler almost was one. I mean, he really pushed submarine
technology. That's true. That was the last evil genius. He's terrible.
Submarine technology immensely. He really went hard into experimenting in biochemicals and bioterrorism and things like that, and as well as the nuclear program. So, I mean... He was the beginning stages, but he sure as hell wasn't as smart as Elon Musk. Elon Musk is going to come up with some, you know, he's going to fire tungsten rods at us from space. You know, he keeps televising all his rocket tests, and everybody's like, "Oh, you're so smart!" And then he's gonna take over every TV station one day and go, "Hey, you guys were all clapping while I was putting my weapons into space."
Oh God,
this is something we need to start worrying about.
maybe not with him. He seems like a nice guy. I think he's a nice guy.
He's a great guy. He was just on Rick and Morty. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, it was great.
But you're making me think. It probably won't be Elon Musk, but man, we got to be careful about those evil geniuses.
So in the Rick and Morty episode, they go to an alternate dimension where he's Elon Tusk and he has tusks like a boar.
Yeah.
And the reason when Morty's asking Rick why he went to see this one and not the real version, he was like, well, the real Elon Musk likes to constantly put power moves on you. Yeah. Like, and this guy, since he has tusks, he kind of didn't develop that personality piece of himself. But it was actually Elon that voiced really? Himself. And he goes, yes, I hear what you're saying, but let's talk about this over here. And they move. He goes, you didn't really have to move. I just wanted to move you.
That's a power play. I mean, what stuff they're working on, though, on a serious note, it's not just like the underwater or underground highways. You could do underwater highways. Why not? It might be easier than underground. But the rockets that he builds, and then they land them.
They land themselves.
The landing rockets.
Yes.
That's and Elon Musk talks about this. He's like, this is the whole reason I'm doing this is to get to Mars. The whole reason I even built SpaceX and launching satellites, it's just to get to Mars. That's the whole point. And the only way you can make Mars commercially viable is to be able to land the rockets and then have it take off again, like reusable rockets, which is just unbelievable. And you watch the videos of them testing this and destroying rockets in the process because you're going to have some failures.
I mean, you feel sad when you crash your drone, and that was $230. I can't imagine sitting there in Elon's chair and his rocket just exploded. Like,
yeah, and that's like a $230 billion.
Do you have the check?
Yeah. I mean, but then they land it. They figure this stuff out, and they've landed it. It's crazy. So, I mean, it's just really cool stuff. I mean, innovation, the things that happen these days are just absolutely incredible. It makes you really excited to see what's happening next. That's why we're going to get NASA on this podcast.
Are you going to put yourself in a Tesla truck?
There's a Tesla truck?
Oh, yeah.
Is that coming or does it already exist?
It's you can pre-order it right now.
Huh.
He already unveiled it. I mean,
yeah.
He kind of had an embarrassing moment and it failed some tests on the stage because he was like, I have indestructible glass. He's like, show him, Jim. And Jim throws a bowling ball through the window and it just breaks. And he's
no
like,
way.
Well, that one might have been cracked first. Try this other window. It can destruct me. Throws that one through. He's like, all right.
Well, all right.
Maybe windows, we don't do live shows anymore.
I mean, why would the indestructible window even be the selling point unless you're like I don't know.
Because weird. Really, I saw a figure a while back ago that had said almost 74% of automobile fatalities would have not been fatalities had the vehicle just had a standard roll bar.
Yeah.
So it's like, why don't we just start putting those on?
The roll bars seem like a good idea. Seatbelts and roll bars solve a lot of problems. But speaking of, okay, so I have been victim to this testing of indestructible windows.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You weren't inside the indestructible window.
No, let me explain. So in high school, we lived in an apartment in Bogota, Colombia. So my
like everybody in America.
Like everybody in high school, sometimes you move to a war-torn country. And I loved every minute of it.
And this was like the late 60s too, right?
I'm 35. So this was, I graduated high school in 2002. My dad was in the oil and gas industry.
We pretty much are the same age.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look this much older than you. Damn it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look good. It's just the gray hair.
It's all the gas station food.
You look wise.
You're the only person to ever use that word to explain me.
Yeah, well... I'm unique. And so my dad worked in the oil and gas industry. That's why we lived in Colombia. And we lived in an apartment as a result. And one day the neighbors complained that there was a little like hole in one of their windows in the floor just below ours. And my parents immediately blamed my brother, my little brother. He's like 5 years younger than me because he was using a slingshot to just shoot out little pellets outside out of our window.
Bearings.
And I was like, and I defended my brother. Okay. And I said, there's no way that ball bearing, you know, from that distance would actually break that window. Like these things just aren't that strong. It's a small slingshot. There's no way he did that. All right, let me show you. And I like pulled it back. I pulled back the slingshot with the ball bearing in it. I let it rip at one of our own windows. And it broke the hell out of that window.
But this
it destroyed
this,
it.
Yeah, but this demonstration is hilarious. now we have to replace two windows.
What the hell did you do? Like this. They had to replace two windows. Not ideal. Not ideal. Those are nice apartments.
That's amazing. I don't think I broke any glass as a kid. I can't remember. No,
really?
No windows.
Yeah. Well, what did you do?
I mean, we were always skateboarding, so we were breaking ankles.
Yeah, breaking bones. I never broke a bone as a kid. My first broken bone was in Buds.
Ooh.
Yeah, just right in the middle of Hell Week, my first Hell Week. And so I got the opportunity to
do
start over and do more. It's called,
So you had a hell and a half week.
Yeah. Hell and a half. Basically a hell and a half week is what I ended up doing. Plus an entirely new first phase, which is always really cool. But that was a stress fracture that just kind of fractured eventually.
Just kept going.
Yeah. Just really gets you. I remember the moment it broke. It was like, we were rounding a corner because we run with boats on our heads during Hell Week. You can't travel from point A to point B during Hell Week unless you have a boat on your head. Does that make sense?
Because
every
time I've been deployed.
Yeah. Well, because in combat, you never know when you're going to have all this weight on your head.
or you need a boat.
Yeah, both.
I mean, you're giving me a lot of good video ideas right now because you did say that you would come do comedy videos.
I do. Yeah, I want to do some comedy videos. I'm a trained comedian, as it turns out. And,
you do get a lot of compliments from our group about your speaking abilities.
Thank you.
Very funny.
Thank you. I you know who else I've gotten a compliment from?
Ellen.
I would wish, actually. I kind of like Ellen. But Steven Spielberg.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cooler than Ellen.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to get a compliment about your acting from somebody, that's probably the guy. And so this is how that story goes. This was on Saturday Night Live. So he's a fan of the show. And he happened to be in New York during that time. And he was filming some other movie that he wanted me to be in. And I was like, oh, no, Steven, I'm busy. And
him again.
Yeah. It's crazy how often he texts me.
He's a habitual texter.
Yeah. Yeah. Always late too. Hey, Dan, what about this script? No, Steven, I don't have time to read your scripts. Like, yeah, I know you want my input, but it's just not going
to
happen.
I know you want me to be a superhero, but yeah, I can't.
I'm sorry. I'm not, you know, okay, fine. I'll be the next Nick Fury. Fine. They're all retiring. I feel like I should be the next Nick Fury. Anyway, yeah. That's a different conversation.
Be his son. It's like weird.
Yeah.
His son.
Yeah.
Also has an eye patch.
There'd be some explaining to do. Samuel L. Jackson. We'll figure that out. Whatever. Yeah. There's a storyline for everything, right? So, I just got another tangent. I'm thinking how this Nick Fury lost his eye. It was just in one of the recent movies.
Yes, it was. How did he
lose his eye?
I don't remember. I only watched the new Avengers once, and I think it was in that one.
Well, we'll get back to that. What were we talking about?
How Steven Spielberg told you.
Steven Spielberg's story. Funny. Okay, so we're on Saturday Night Live. I do my skit. It's going really well. It goes really well. I get off the stage, and I'm just watching the rest of the show. And which is a very cool experience, by the way. Like, it's such a small, compact environment. There's only three stages, and you know what three stages they are. They're the music stage, the stage that I was on, which is the
newscaster.
What do they call it? Like, yeah, I can't remember what they call it now. And then like the living room set. Okay, so and they're very it's very compact, and so it's easy to watch all of it happen all at once. And we're just hanging out, and Lorne Michaels introduces me to Steven Spielberg. He's there, and I get to hang out with him, which is a pretty cool experience in and of itself.
What was he doing there?
He's a fan. He's just a fan. Obviously, a lot of what I say doesn't seem true, but some of it is true. He was just in New York filming a movie, and so when he's there, he likes to show up and hang out backstage, and he's like, and this is all true. He goes, Dan, you could have a real future in Hollywood, and you got great comedic timing. And I was like, that's an awesome compliment coming from Steven Spielberg. But I look around and I notice that nobody heard that compliment, which is a problem if I'm going to tell the story, right?
You were hoping Kenan Thompson was right there. You're like, Kenan?
Yeah. Hey, anybody?
Did you meet Kenan?
Yeah. Yes.
Man,
he's awesome too. And Kate McKinnon, really cool too. I think she's one of the most talented comedians on there.
I mean, our age group, we grew up with Kenan and Kel and all that. And
oh, they're great. Like that. Yeah, so that's
like,
true.
It's like Kenan kind of has a...
He's just a good guy.
Yeah, always like, been.
Yeah, he's just a good...
Never been in the news for just being an asshole or something.
Yeah,
like.
No, he's a good guy. And frankly, most of the people, all the people I met there, I thought were good people and genuinely happy to see me there. So he says that, and I was like, there's nobody here to hear that. And so I see my wife like watching the show from across the stage, and I motioned for her to come over, and I just ask, Steven, can you please just repeat what you just said? tell her
witness.
What you told me.
I need a witness.
Tell her what you told me. And she like looks at me and rolls her eyes. Like, I know why you did that. I know why you did that. So that's all true. He doesn't text me regularly.
Listen, he would put you in a movie.
I would hope so.
I mean, you remember, like, right when you got elected, I think I tweeted, I can't wait for Russell Crowe to play Dan Crenshaw in a movie someday.
Oh, that'd be great.
I see Russell the resemblance.
I've gotten that a lot. I like to think it's more of a gladiator Russell Crowe.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm going with. That's the only movie I've seen with Russell Crowe in it.
Are you not entertained? I mean, that was our generation's movie.
Yes, absolutely.
They don't make great movies. Movies like that anymore. I feel like I don't know what we're doing.
We're making them for China. That's why.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting topic to get into.
Got five of the seven studios have been purchased.
Yeah, and they have a lot of control over because because movies don't want to make two different versions, one for America and one for China, and they have censorship. They don't have freedom of speech.
There's more of them.
Yeah.
Therefore, their market is much larger. So. And this was a funny conversation that I was having with another filmmaker last week was, other countries don't really make movies. When was the last time you saw Russia's Avengers?
Yeah.
Like,
no, they don't.
Our Hollywood is the only one that makes huge blockbuster masterpieces. Like, yeah, there's a couple good dramas that come out of maybe Great Britain and every once in a while sometimes Canada. But our Hollywood is the only one in the world that's making
consistent
big scale entertainment. And I mean, even now though, you're seeing a lot of migration to video games because the video games are outpacing movies, where, you know, opening week on a video game is in the billions, not, you know, hoping for 55 million or 100 million in the box office. Yeah. So,
wow.
I mean, you saw, I think it was the last Ghost Recon or a few years ago, Kevin Spacey was the lead in that. Like, you had a lot of other big actors that are jumping over to these video games. And
Spacey's in a video game?
Yes. He was the main character. And I believe it was Ghost Recon.
Really? Huh.
Or Ghosts or something like that.
Well, you got to move on from House of Cards somehow.
Yeah. And that's literally where they got it. It was after the first season of House of Cards.
After the first season. So this is a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, but I mean, getting back to the Chinese issue, you know, it is of concern. I do like what President Trump is. I like the basic message, right? Which is that China is not just a competitor. They are framing themselves more and more as an adversary. And at first, that's economically speaking, and then eventually that becomes militarily speaking.
I mean, they've got, I'm sure you know, the stuff that they've recently released as far as defense stuff that they've recently developed is getting kind of scary. Specifically, their version of their M9X.
Yeah.
I've heard from my pilot friends that it's their M120.
Yeah.
They said that thing is scary.
Yeah, and the advantage the Chinese have, and basically every country has that's outside the United States, is you can focus on one thing, innovate in this one specific topic, or weapon, or capability, and force us to compete with that. Whereas, because as the United States, we have to be the best at everything. If we're going to continue being the underwriters of the global world order, which I think we should be. For everybody listening, that doesn't mean be the world's policeman. All right. There's not some arbitrary international law that we're trying to force, but there is a global order based on liberal democracy and free trade. That the only ones who will possibly defend it is the United States of America. And we cannot forget that. It doesn't mean we go nation building. It doesn't mean we go intervening where we shouldn't, but it does mean that we still have to be the best. And if we're not going to be the best we can hope for would be somebody like Great Britain, you know, like being the best. But they're not even close. And the entirety of Europe isn't even close. The only ones who are coming or trying to get close are Russia and China. And they have a very different worldview than we do. Yes. And we cannot see that as being able to accommodate.
They both love control. They want control over the people.
Authoritarianism, and China is basically engaging in what is modern day colonialism right now. And none of that is good. And we have to combat it, but we have to combat it in a very different and smarter way than we have in the past. It's just, we're not in the same kind of battles. It's a different world. So I'll end with this as we get to, later in the night here, because you're my third podcast that we've recorded today.
For a while.
Yeah. So what were you actually doing up in DC? This is a little more serious topic, and we'll go to some actually policy issues, because my podcast is generally about policy issues and we haven't discussed any.
So I was here, and this has been an experience. I've never seen this stuff in person, and just sitting in Congressman Mullen's office today, and I was just
checking. Did you wear a suit or were you dressed like this?
I was dressed like this. I was not planning to do this at all. This was so last minute that it was like, hey, you're in this area, get here. This is happening now.
Yeah.
But like being in Congressman Mullen's office, I was just talking.
It's good. It's more authentic.
To his, yeah, you know, it's kind of how I am.
We don't kick you out just because you're not wearing a suit. I was just curious.
There's a lot of comments on the internet like, oh, typical JT, look at you.
Cut his hair.
Talking to his front desk girl, you know, just engaging with her about, you know, she's telling me about the phone calls. Like everybody talks about, I'm going to call my congressman. I'm going to call my congressman. And it's like, and just hearing what she had to say.
Poor staffers at the front desk. Yeah, the things
she's
they
like, she's like, I was like, well, do you log these and do you show them? They're like, if they are in our district, I absolutely do. I take notes and he reads them. But if they're out of our district and someone's mad about Twitter or someone's mad about a vote or something like that, she's like, you know, it's just like, I have to sit there and just take this berating.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, okay, what's kind of the when you get these people that are angry, are they generally only informed about a fraction of what's going on? She was like, absolutely. It's like, okay, so you've got a lot of headline-driven people that aren't actually reading the articles or educating themselves before they pick up the phone and scream at a poor staffer. Like, that was, so it was just very interesting. And then seeing these buildings from the inside and how you guys actually work when you're here was very interesting. But I got to go on the Senate floor and watch the vote for the 2020 NDAA. And inside that, that packet was the Stay Scale bill. And it was a portion, or not necessarily an amendment to the Ferris Doctrine, but giving new options to active duty personnel that can hold military doctors accountable for malpractice. And I think it has not been changed in 77 years. So I feel like we made some progress today.
Yeah. There's an argument for that for sure. And so as you're up here advocating for that, what other policy issues are you, do you guys weigh in?
Like, not really, because our personalities and what we've done in it with our channels and everything like that is we've been everybody's escape. And sadly, the climate of social media has become so negative in the last few years that people are no longer having fun and like enjoying it. It's more of just a constant negative, just kind of thorn in your life now. And so we try to stay completely away from that, because we want our audience to know that when you come to one of our Instagrams or one of our YouTube channels or our Facebook, you're going to be entertained and you're going to laugh and you're going to get an escape for a little bit. And we like sitting in that area. But with something like this, it's just, it hits close to home. You have a friend of ours that really was dealt a bad hand. And it's also, at the same time, I feel like I can't sit by and say, yeah, man, feel for you, good luck. When I have this platform of a lot of like-minded people, I feel like I owe it to him and everybody else to tell the story at least and let them decide themselves.
Yeah. And what do you think the biggest issues are facing the veteran community? And so I'll frame this question in many different ways. I mean, so there's the VA hospitals, there's the transition, there's the suicide rate, there's which I view as a lack of sense of purpose. But even that's hard to identify, because the suicides come mostly from Vietnam era veterans, and not our post 9/11 age group. So, I mean, you know, what is going on? I mean, you being so closely in tune with the veteran community, what do you guys see?
I feel like what I think is the most important thing that we should be really defining and asking ourselves is, The high military leadership and you and your colleagues, we need to really come to terms with what we asked our guys to do the last 20 years. Like and even before that, obviously, in the Gulf War, the Cold War, and everything like that. We need to really understand, like, you know, we take 18-year-old kids and we break them and break them and break them and break them for 10, 15, 20 years. And then at that 20 years, it's like, okay, you're done. Like, if we put things in place that during that whole process, and these are things that we have one of my friends here that I've discussed this with. If we put things in that entire that 20-year process that developed our guys to be better thinkers and better initiators and things like that, and give them a break. You know, if you have someone that enlisted in 2001, when he hits 10 years, give the guy a half a year off to just unwind. Like,
that's an interesting concept. Yeah.
We can afford that. We can pay our people, and we can sit back and say, okay, you know, and you know what? We we can offer certain programs or bonuses or time that says, well, if you enroll yourself into a vocational school or into some sort of advanced learning, you can get up to a year off at your 10-year mark, but you're going to give us at least 5 more years, or you're going to give us at least 10 more years. But developing our guys and giving them the much needed time off, because really it's, start knocking your head when you really think about this. You deploy an army division for 15 months and they come home and it's like, hey, you guys have 30 days of block leave. No, you're spending your 30 days of earned leave while you're in a war zone for 15 months. And you get a month off. Like, it's like, and then you repeat that cycle for every other year for 10 years of someone's life. And then you're wondering why they're all a little whacked out.
Yeah.
So that's what I think. That's my personal opinion. I think we should just really look at.
So force management issues, yes, is really what you're talking about.
And really understanding the psychology of what we ask, we ask our service members to do. You know, we turned these guys into war fighters to go and fight, kill, break, you know, destroy. Like, we need to create the same process that we, you know, you go through 40 weeks of basic training in the army to become an infantryman to learn how to do this. Yeah. But you get 1 week of TAPS when you get out. We have to build the ramp back in.
There needs to be a longer transition period and a more well-informed transition period and tailored to, I mean, cause I remember going through TAPS and thinking, really don't need this. Like, you know, it's good for some people. I don't want it. Yeah. Like, it doesn't.
Same thing. I opted out of most of it. And
I don't think I had the option of opting out, but I had to go through it, but, it's a little silly, but, and those programs are out there, you know, just so people understand, like, you can go to school for a year or two, but it's definitely not open to everybody. It might only be open to officers. I mean, opening that up to enlisted guys is an interesting idea.
Creating a method to really, you know, tune our guys psychologically.
Yeah. Yeah. And
because you know how leave is too. You know what it's like when you go on. Do they leave you alone? No. Well, your phone's ringing.
Depends.
Emails, texts. I need you to come in and drop this piece of paper off. I need you to, there's really never that just unplugged time period that lets someone reset and get excited. I mean, and I think that we can take a lot of examples off of the National Guard and the reserves, because seeing the climate inside a National Guard unit going from active duty, where you had guys going home to a normal job and then they got to come put the uniform on, and the excitement and the motivation and the attention to detail and everything, it was like they were recharged, and now they are so amped to be back in uniform.
Yeah, and that's the right word. What you're getting at is a recharge. And that's interesting. You know, and also giving the flexibility, because there's a lot of younger guys with, you know, full of piss and vinegar who just want to go, go, go. Like, maybe give them the opportunity to let them go, go, go.
Let those guys keep
going. But there are some in a platoon who, you know, have families, maybe just had a kid 6 months ago. Maybe they don't need to go, go, go. Maybe you can switch those guys out. And in the effort to do what you're saying and to engage in force management, we in recent years, I guess they're not that recent anymore, but we have these ratios where you just deployed to being home ratios.
Yeah, dwell to.
Dwell time, right? And as a result, so that's well-meaning, it's well-intentioned, but just like every one-size-fits-all policy, hint, hint, this is why I'm a conservative, it has consequences, right? When you remove flexibility, it hurts the people you're trying to help the most. So yeah, like everybody has the same dwell time ratio. But guess what? That's still bad for some people, especially given what they might be going through at that time. Give the command the opportunity to say, hey, we'll let your dwell time ratio go out of bounds because you're a single guy and you're 24 and you're ready to go.
We're not going to let you sit at home for 30 days and like, get
you
in
don't,
trouble.
You don't like being at home. Yeah. Like, cause you know, there's no family, there's nothing. And this is what you signed up for. This is why you trained your whole life. Like, got it. Let's send you. And granted, some of this is specific to the special operations community and the way
we're being biased to kind of
a little bit. And you know, you got to think bigger than that, but again, this goes to flexibility. Why not have different rules for different communities?
Exactly.
You know, and these are very different communities, have different problems and different solutions. And so, And I think our military commanders are understand that, but you got to give them the flexibility to engage in that kind of decision making and just keep people happy and engaged.
Be open to innovation too.
Yeah,
that's my last takeaway. Is the military needs to be like we were in the late 1940s, like innovating.
Yeah,
you know, having guys like Chuck Yeager and people out there that are experimenting and given the permissive and flexibility to say, hey, let's try this.
Yeah. Okay, so last topic. We're obviously getting late, but I don't care. Do you have somewhere to be?
Nope.
Oh, well, some of the people waiting on us do, but but they have the opportunity to leave if they want, except for that one because he's helping us record. Sorry,
he
Danny.
He looks comfy.
He's very comfy. He's gets to sit in the big chair. Okay, last question. So why are you guys so against the Second Amendment when you call your company the Black Rifle Coffee? What's up with that?
Oh, of course. We're so against it.
How do you feel about the Second Amendment? How do you feel about this glass that I'm drinking out of that?
I love it.
Bullet in it.
I love it. Is that a nine-line glass? Is it Daniel Defense?
I don't know. You're asking me hard questions. Oh, there it is. I don't know where it came from. Somebody gave it to me.
I like my U.S. House of Representatives glass right here.
Yeah, that's fancy. That's fancy.
No, we love it. We love it. My closet is full.
Of glasses?
Of guns.
Of guns. Okay. Yes, Black Rifle Coffee. Okay, that obviously has a certain connotation to it, and a lot of your videos are clearly heavy on the Second Amendment. So how do you feel about all that? Where do you think we're at as a country?
You know, it's one of those hot button items right now. That's a touchy subject to a lot of people, but going back to kind of the common sense, you know, common sense stuff, when you look at the data, you pull apart the data. You can't, you know,
really look
the biggest
at it.
Frustration.
Don't just take what you want
like,
from it.
Honestly, I'll give you my one piece that I feel like needs to be a piece of legislation. Like, immediately, especially with we are in the information age where it is the most easy for us to communicate across the world in seconds than we've ever been able to do this. And when an elected official goes on a camera and says an incorrect fact about a hot button policy, they should be relieved at that point because you are affecting millions upon millions of people's opinions based on misinformation, and no one is ever, you know,
accountability.
Yeah, there's no accountability.
Well, the press is supposed to be that accountability, and they're very good at being accountable for conservatives.
Maxine,
not so much for
Waters
liberals,
recently yeah. that went on and said that, you know, an AR-15 weighs as much as 5 moving boxes and shoots a 50 caliber bullet. Like, quote me if that, because I'm not sure if that was her. It was a representative. Mm-hmm. You go on camera and say that, like, you just disseminated misinformation to hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people.
Right.
And you need to be held accountable for that, because even if you're painting a retraction, you have just pushed an opinion.
Yeah.
If not more opinions, one way or another, from somebody that you weren't educated about talking.
Of course, we can't do that, right? We can't force people to know things. We can't technically hold anybody accountable for spreading false information unless it's explicitly designed in a defamatory manner towards another person and their livelihood. But the problem still exists, which is, misinformation about the Second Amendment debate and misinformation about automatic versus semi-automatic assault rifles and all these terms.
I feel misinformation in general is our biggest enemy going into the next.
You know what's interesting? You know what an interesting survey is? Some data here is when asked what the number one threats to democracy are, people responded, number one, money and politics. Number two, misinformed voters. And I thought that was so interesting because they don't understand the irony of that relationship. So the only reason that we even raise money in politics and in campaigns is to inform voters of what we think. Like if you just went to my YouTube channel.
Leaflets cost money,
right,
mailers cost money, phone calls,
commercials,
TV,
all these things, staff. And if you just went to my YouTube and social media and I could just tell you what I thought and that's all you listened to, then I wouldn't have to actually buy any ad space whatsoever. So anyway, it's kind of a side note. It's interesting. But Yeah, this debate especially has people all riled up, and the data matters and the context matters. So, you know, and we'll just stick to one side of the debate because we don't have all the time in the world. And you represent Black Rifle Coffee. So let's talk about the AR-15, the banning of AR-15 debates, right? And you know,
this, what is it? My question is let's just pretend it happens tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What do we solve?
Right.
What did we solve? Your sub 300 deaths a year are accounted for from an AR-15. Now take away suicides, take away accident or negligent discharges. How many, I mean, look at,
there's no evidence that you would actually solve those deaths either. Yes. Because like they would have substituted a gun.
Then look into, you know, was it legally acquired? Was it illegally acquired?
Well,
was it
you just use a different gun? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Because if you can argue to me that this one death would never have happened if AR-15s didn't exist.
Yeah, that guy would know. If he couldn't go to the store and buy an AR-15, he's not going to kill somebody. That's essentially what you're saying.
Right.
And again,
and you can't, that's not true.
The real statistics and then asking those questions, you're not solving any problems. You ban the AR-15, you've literally solved nothing.
Like, yeah.
And you know what a really good statistic is look into how many gun-related violent crimes are committed by an individual that has purchased two or more firearms legally. Hmm. It's
that's interesting.
It's astonishing.
What is that?
Because it's like sub 1%.
Yeah.
So it's right there in front of our face. Your legal, you know, gun buyers are not out there committing crimes.
Yeah, it's true. It's just not what happens. And to put your other statistic into perspective, that's less than 3% of gun deaths, by the way. Rifles account for less than 3% of gun deaths. And then you have to convince me that even if, you know, because 3% is still gun deaths. We want to prevent deaths. Sure. Absolutely. But then you have to convince me that they wouldn't have committed that murder in the absence of a rifle.
Of a specific...
Which is, of course, not true. Like, you can easily substitute
and
that
you
weapon.
And you and I, from our background, I'm sure we both kind of chuckle at the AR-15 argument, because it's like, we know that that's... Yeah. What about
you guys carry guns
the
in the M14? Air Force?
Like the M14, that's fucking way cooler.
It is way cooler. And yeah, they're not offensive weapons is the point, you know? And because people are always saying, you don't need a weapon of war in your home. I'm like, that's not a weapon of war. That was our self-defense weapon. You have to understand that when we go on offense, we're using very different weapons,
An AGM-65.
Yeah. I mean, we're calling in you guys to call in the big guns, you know, and that's... And we're using crew-served weapons. We're not using personalized weaponry. And people need to understand that. The other thing is listen, if somebody comes into my home and wants to attack me and I'm getting out of bed and it's dark and there's some adrenaline pumping, I'll probably be fine with my pistol. Probably. Even at 20, 30 feet. Because 20, 30 feet is... That is a distance. Yeah. That's not a trivial distance. Okay. And if you've ever been on a range, you understand that, but it's also a very common distance across a hall or a living room. Okay. So you tell me, are you going to actually defend your home at that distance versus an intruder? The answer is probably not. I might be fine because I practice at this stuff often, still do. And I have a lifetime of training.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of different, but guess what? My wife not going to be able to do that. She can barely handle a pistol on the range with no stress. Okay. You know what she can handle pretty well? An AR. Okay. Why is that? Well, there's 3 points of contact. Okay. You have both hands on it and it's in your shoulder. It's very easy to aim. Guess what else? It doesn't kick the way a pistol does.
You don't necessarily. It's especially sub 50 meters.
Yeah. Like, within 50 meters.
Put the barrel at the direction you want to go.
And, right. And you're going to hit it. And it's amazing. Like to watch. Especially women, like watch their faces when they've never shot a gun before, try to shoot the pistol. They're a little uncomfortable with it. They're still good at it. Cause women are very good at, just for some reason, they're just better at training on pistols sometimes, and aiming, but they're still uncomfortable with it. And then they get a rifle and they're like, wow, this thing works for me. It It just does. And it doesn't seem that way at first. It's counterintuitive because it seems big and scary. I mean,
we've seen this in the news a couple times in the last few years. A child under 15 years old has defended his house two or three times with an AR.
Right. It's much easier to handle. I mean, once you get, you know, you just train with it for just a little bit of time and it's much easier to handle. And it's truly a self-defense weapon. So we'll end on that.
Love it.
How about that?
Pleasure to be here. This is really cool. Second Amendment
note. Yeah, this is really cool. I'm, what do you think of The Office?
I love it. I mean, yeah, obviously great. I'm going to send you a couple more posters of me.
We'll definitely put them up.
All right. Yeah. Right, for sure. Right, yep.
Yeah, we'll get those right up.
No, this is amazing, and I really appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks, JT Landing Page. Appreciate you being on the show.